It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, wimpy, wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a hefty, ultra-strong trash bag.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
What's going on, everybody? Hope everyone's having a great week. It's Thursday morning as you guys are listening, watching into this. This is the Bengals Show presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Alongside me is a new face for our show, but for those that watch, you know, in Bengaldom and watch all the different shows and everything, as Tom Justin, good friend of mine, co-host of Bengal Gym and Friends. Tom, how are we doing today?
Very good. How about yourself, Joe?
We are doing well. Kids have so much crap to do. It's rare to be able to sit down without having to drive them to one sport or the next, but we're doing pretty well on this Thursday. Just had some Chinese food, so we're ready to rock and roll.
I was always more into driving them to practice than helping them with their homework, but, you know.
Yeah, that's unfortunately, my son started high school. He is goes to private school, so he's got to be driven both ways. He was on the golf team. They didn't have busing because they're a private school, so I had to drive him to practice, from practice, to matches, from matches. Thank God that's over, so it's just driving him to school for now. He needs to find a friend who's 16 years old and has a license. That is my hope for him for the end of the school year, at least until he gets his own license. So before we get going here, please do like and subscribe. Those who are watching us on YouTube, youtube.com/riverfrontcincy for those that are listening on the podcast feed. Also, we want to thank our friends at SeatGeek. Use our code Riverfront, $20 off your first SeatGeek order. Download the app, Riverfront, one word. Easiest to use ticketing platform out there. Each ticket is graded. Green is a good deal. Red is a bad deal. Again, SeatGeek. Download the app, code Riverfront, one word, for $20 off your first order. Now that we got all the business out of the way, we are four games through a 17-game season. I really don't want to go too deep into last Sunday's game. It was just an absolute shit show. There's not much else to say. They look terrible in all phases. Was there anything positive that you could glean from Sunday's game?
The punting was better, but he had enough practice. It should have been better. That was about it. Like you said, we won't go too deep into it, but the quarterback isn't performing the way we know, and he will perform. Yeah. The offensive line had a bad week. I think really all facets of the team had a bad week together. There's still not a lot of separation from the wideouts, but at the same time, they're also not running deep patterns. You know, the tight ends, you know, are what they are. I think everybody's performing at what they need to do, but we don't have a starter yet. Joe Mixon's playing well. He's not getting the ball maybe as much as we all would like, but there also may be some, you know, some trepidations as to how effective the run game could be. Where I was actually more disappointed, and I mentioned this on Bengal Gym and Friends on Tuesday, was, you know, everybody right away was out on Joe Burrow, and fine, the offense scored 3 points. Joe Burrow didn't miss a single tackle.
Yeah.
Joe Burrow did not give up one pass, you know, third or eight or third and 14. He didn't, you know, miss his coverage one time. And against a banged up, just blatantly bad offensive line, especially when it comes to pass protection, he didn't fail to get pressure on Ryan Tannehill. So yeah, it was a loss all the way around. Zach's really good at stepping up right away and putting a thumb in his own chest, saying it's the first place to look. And, you know, I think you can look at some there at some of the offensive play calling. And I think, you know, if we are desperate, then they're going to have to act a little more desperate and start calling the plays a little more desperate. And, you know, hopefully we can get a win Sunday. The world always looks better after a win, and then come home, figure out a way to beat the Sea Chickens. And, you know, you're 3-3 in the bye, and hopefully Joe's close to 100% after that.
Yeah, I mean, the offense has struggled all year long. They haven't had a first half touchdown. So seeing them struggle wasn't, you know, I mean, it's kind of what we're used to. It's kind of what we're expecting a little bit right now. So while that's disappointing, that wasn't maddening. That's kind of just a continuing trend that you hope will kind of course correct itself as Burrow gets further away from the injury and hopefully gets closer to 100%. The defense, it was absolutely just awful pretty much from the word go. Trey Hendrickson had another good game. I mean, he spent half his time in the backfield, but he's the only one. I'm just looking at the box score here for that Tennessee. And Tennessee has one decent wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins. Treylon Burks didn't play. He was the rookie they had last year that's really talented. Just looking at the longest receptions, DeAndre Hopkins had one for 38 yards. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine, 22 yards. Chris Moore, who graduated from UC, God, I swear, like 20 years ago. He's been kicking around for a while. One catch, 44 yards. Chingo Okonkwo, 13 yards. Josh Wiley made his first two NFL catches. Again, another UC guy. First two NFL catches, 24 yards long. And they're not getting a lot of help from the safeties. Dax Hill's had a good year, but he still missed his fair share of coverages or miscommunication. We were concerned coming into the season that was going to be an issue because you lost your two starting safeties, and the two starting safeties were probably the most, we'll say, fundamentally sound duo in the league, in my estimation, with Von Bell and Jesse Bates. Von Bell wasn't, like, obviously didn't have the physical tools that Dax Hill has. I don't think any safety has the tools that guy has. I think he's going to be a star, but it's, you know, we're now a quarter through the season, and these are things that we'd hoped had been ironed out in the first handful of years, but there was the play at the end of the first half, the touchdown pass, the jump pass from Derrick Henry. They motioned, you know, they came out with Jeffrey Simmons. They motioned to the motioned Tannehill out wide, so Derrick Henry was going to get the direct snap. Bengals called timeout. You know, went to the sideline, talked about it. Titans came back out, did motion the set up the exact same way. Bengals knew they weren't going to run the ball. 14 seconds left. They're not going to run the ball, or they don't have time to kick the field goal. They were out of timeouts. So they did the exact play that they expect them to do. Nobody covered the tight end over the middle of the field or in the middle of the end zone. And that's not so much on coaching as it is on the players, but it's like, you guys just talked about this exact play. You knew what they were going to do. You knew Derrick Henry was going to take a direct snap, throw a jump pass to somebody, and you leave the tight end, the only receiver on the left side of the field, uncovered.
You know, Joe is being as old as the franchise itself. I could say this: allowing the other team to complete a pass over the middle to their tight end or their slot receiver is as strong a Bengal tradition as the stripes on the helmet, you know, or you know, eating a hot dog at Riverfront or Paul Brown or Paycor. It's been the biggest bugaboo defensively this franchise has always had. I'll say this about the safeties, and there's a strong argument against what I'll say, but I'm going to go ahead and stick to it. I thought Jesse Bates, as gifted as he could be and as special he could be at times, he could also – he fluctuated. Yeah. Jesse could have some – bad games and had some bad years. And when he was good, he was really good. He was one of the best three or four safeties in the game. But when he was bad, he was missing tackles. He was missing coverages. The Super Bowl season, it was the first year he pouted about his contract. He was awful. He was probably the worst player on the defense until the playoff game against the Raiders. He got burned for a touchdown in the first half. And then after that, the second half of the Raiders game, the Titans game, the Chiefs game, and the Super Bowl, he was an all-pro caliber safety. We miss him. for now, but I think, just like you said, I think Dax Hill is going to be a superstar.
Yep.
And he's going to need some time. We knew the safeties were going to need some time. We miss Von Bell more. I think that's where those passes across the middle are coming from. Von Bell, when he came here, he ran like he had concrete on his feet. and Lou Anarumo and that defensive backfield staff, they can coach. And, you know, they made him into one heck of a safety. He made more big plays at safety than probably anybody else than David Fulcher in the history of the franchise. He was just a big play guy, and he was a steady guy, sure tackler, and really learned how to cover the middle. I think it's a lot to ask of Jordan Battle and Nick Scott to be him this quick. Here's the line here, and I think we're going to talk about Cam Taylor-Britt a little bit tonight, but Cam Taylor-Britt, last year, we heard a lot from Anarumo, I don't like to play rookie defensive backs. They're not ready, and that's true. They really, yeah. I mean, rookie corners get lit up. But when Ouzie got hurt, and he had to go in, it was just after Halloween. Guess what? He played lights out.
Yeah.
And he's been up and down this year. But I think he's going to be a shutdown safety. So I think some of those backfield problems are going to get solved after the bye week. You know, after it'll be 2 weeks of regular season at that point. I think you're going to see things trending up dramatically for our safeties and our corners.
Yeah, I don't disagree. As a whole, defensive backfield is still really young. Cheeto's still, he's playing more now, but in the first handful of weeks, he's still kind of on a pitch count, and they've been bringing in DJ Turner. And I think DJ Turner is going to be a fantastic player. He tackles as well as, you know, the rest of the guys. And by and large, the Bengals have a fantastic tackling secondary. They didn't show up on Sunday, but like that's a absolute hallmark of a Lou Anarumo defense. It helps that he's got a background as a secondary coach, that those are positions that get coached up really, really well. But yeah, you've got DJ Turner, who's an absolute, you know, who's a very raw rookie. You've got Cam Taylor-Britt, who's a second year player. Dax Hill's a second year player that barely played at all last year. Nick Scott is still a younger guy. He's just in his mid 20s, and Keto's the old guy at late 20s, what is he, maybe 27, 28?
I think he's 28 or 29, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So it's an incredibly young, easily the most athletic defensive backfield in the NFL. I don't think there's any doubt about that. I've got incredibly high hopes for Jordan Battle. I wasn't fond of the pick. In hindsight, I really don't like the Bengals draft, how it went down this year. They kind of forgot a couple positions that turned out important, like a tight end, but Jordan Battle, I think, is going to be Von Bell. The guy was a captain at Alabama, multi-year captain, which tells you everything you need to know about his leadership qualities and his mental acuity, his intangibles. So it's basically, I think there's a good chance if Nick Scott plays the way that he has the last couple weeks, I would not be surprised. I don't think it'll happen, but I would not be surprised to see Jordan Battle out there as a starting safety against San Francisco after the bye.
I haven't studied the percentage of his defensive snaps, but I agree with you. I think it's just by the naked eye, I seem to notice Battle on the field a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more every week. And he had a rough preseason, couple of games, but that goes with it when you're a defensive back. So, you know, the odd thing you mentioned about the draft, Duke has said that Duke Tobin has said that never once on his watch, and even then it's blown up in their faces a few times. But when they draft somebody in the third round, you know, they've normally got a second round grade on them. But they draft somebody at 65, he was probably in their top 50. You know, the word was that when they drafted Jamar Chase at 5, he was number one or number two on their overall board that year. I mean, I remember Zach saying it was actually a pick that didn't involve a lot of discussion or debate going into the draft. It was just, we think this guy's going to be there for us, and let's go get him. And this is the same with Jordan Battle. Evidently, they talked pretty hard about taking him in the second round. They liked him that much. So I think, you know, I think he'll be fine. I think they will be fine. The talent is there. One thing that nobody is talking about, though, and we've talked, you know, enough sports over the years. You know, it doesn't matter even if the Bengals are playing well. What is vital to this city? Chili, bitching about the weather, bitching about our local politicians, and bitching about Mike Brown. Nobody's saying a thing about Bengals ownership or management, nor should they. This team was built to go to the Super Bowl. I thought management did an incredible job this offseason of filling the needs, putting guys in the right places. I was terrified, if not horrified, about the backup quarterback spot. I think that has come to bite them. You know, there are a couple good stories about that and probably the philosophy behind it. But, you know, you still, I think, need that quarterback to, if your quarterback twists an ankle and can't play for 1 or 2 weeks, a guy that you can put in there and hope he can win a game. And Jake Browning not playing tells me they don't think he can win a game. Management did their job this year. This was a well-put-together team. They're green in some spots, namely the backfield. I think the offensive line is better, but still underperformed.
Absolutely.
But they are better, and I think they will get better. But, yeah, there are some guys that have disappointed. The strong safety position has disappointed. Left guard, even though, I mean, Cordarrelle Volson, he's going up against an all-pro or a future Hall of Famer every week. You know, you could put Max Montoya out there or John Hanna, and they would struggle against the gambit he has gone into. So I think everything's going to get better. My fear is by the time things get better and they start playing the way they should be, it's going to be too late.
Yeah, and that's the concern now is, and this is what makes it all the more frustrating that, I'm going to say frustrating, that's the wrong word, infuriating that they left Joe Burrow in the fourth quarter on Sunday. They said like they had Browning was warming up, and he warmed up twice because Burrow got hit in the shoulder a little bit and was kind of working out some kinks on the sideline. He was warming up, getting ready to go in. Bengals got the ball back. Burrow grabbed his helmet, said, give him a thumbs up, and ran into the huddle. Someone needs to, if that's true, someone needs to be the adult and be like, dude, we're down 3 scores. We're not winning this game. You have a nagging injury. Let's get the backup in, give him some snacks, let him run the actual offense just to see what he does against a live first team defense. And granted, we know that it would not turn out well, but I don't know. Somebody, it goes to the whole backup quarterback thing. They're treating Burrow like he's Peyton Manning, and I completely get it. The offense is completely his offense, what he wants to do. They don't do a lot of motion, a lot of pre-snap motion, even though that worked well against the Rams, because Burrow doesn't like a lot of pre-snap motion. He likes the guys lined up so he can see the chessboard before he, to try to diagnose the coverages, to try to diagnose the blitz, while everybody's static. And I get that. They haven't adjusted a lot of the passing tree since he's unable to throw the ball downfield, because this is his offense. It's what he wants to do. Even if he's unable to do it, he's still going to try, still wants to try to complete passes downfield. And especially when he was on the Colts, they never had any decent backup quarterback for Peyton Manning. I mean, Jim Sorgi was quarterback for a long time. The guy wasn't even a good Big Ten quarterback, for crying out loud. And the line was, if anything happens to the number 18, we're fucked. So what does it matter who the backup is when the season's down the crapper anyway, if anything major happens? That being said, if you need someone to fill in for 3 or 4 games, it's nice to have somebody who's useful. And that's, I mean, they brought in Trevor Siemian thinking that he would be, he's had starting experience and he can run an offense. He was all god awful.
I have witnesses. I said back in August, and I normally don't shoot stupid stuff out like this for sports, but I said AJ McCarron is better than any other backup we have. They ought to have him in here, see if he's healed up from his XFL injury, and give him the playbook. I just wonder, after the bye, when he's had 3 or 4 weeks with the playbook and they see him practice, if they're more comfortable in that direction. I mean, I don't think Jake Browning's a long-term backup. No. But, I, you They have to do that. You need to have somebody you can turn to for a series or two or for a week. And in Joe's situation, as a coach, you admire the guy wanting to go in. You admire him wanting to play, to try and get some kind of offensive rhythm going, and all that's great. But sometimes you got to protect the player from himself.
Exactly.
And you have to tell him it's time to sit. Let's not make anything worse. You say you're feeling better every day. Let's just keep it going. Let's, wipe the blood, off our chin and start getting ready for the Cardinals. It's interesting you mentioned Peyton Manning. I don't know if the guy has written this, but I was talking to a writer about our backup quarterback situation in August. And he told me this story. I'll try to keep it quick. He was covering the NFL, and there was a scout he knew really well when Peyton was playing for the Colts. And the guy flew in on a Thursday or a Friday into Indianapolis. He was going to scout some college football games. I think there was a Big Ten game on a Friday night, and then he was going to go to, Purdue or Indiana the next day for another game. And he said, I'm going to drive by the Colts facility. I know some guys there. He got there. They let him in. The Colts were practicing, and he was talking to the Colts quarterback coach, Tom Moore, sort of the pseudo offensive coordinator. And he said, I noticed. I'm watching you. You never give Sorge any snaps. What if something happens to Peyton? He's not going to be ready. And he said he kind of half disgusted looked at him, and he said, if something happens to Peyton, we're blanked. We don't practice. We're blanked. We don't waste practice time on we're blanked. We know we're blanked. We're blanked if Peyton goes down. So, Jim can, practice holding a clipboard. And, there might be a little depth, but over a 17-game schedule and as fast and as hard and as violent as the NFL is, you have to find quality at every position. And that's probably the only piece that management missed this offseason with their intentions and the guys they got.
Yeah, that was exactly what I was referencing and I thought it was Tom. I wasn't sure it was Tom Moore, but it's pretty. But I thought, but that's exactly what I was referencing about them. When I said, like, if anything happens to Burrow, because I remember that quote. So, again, maybe they're just not confident that anyone else can run the Joe Burrow offense with any sort of efficiency that to make it worthwhile, given spend money on the backup quarterback. It's not as if a decent backup quarterback is going to set you an arm and a leg. I think Colt McCoy's still out there, and he's been a solid backup quarterback for a while. He's someone who can pick up the offense and isn't going to absolutely crap his pants when someone comes in the backfield and freak out. I mean, Akili Smith did that for the whole 20 starts that he had in the NFL.
Akili had his own personal problems that help water his performance. But with AJ, we've watched AJ win games in the NFL.
Yeah.
We've watched him in college, just like Joe, in front of, horrific environments, 100,000 people hating him, win back-to-back national championships. Yeah. He likes the city. He likes the organization. I think he's a natural fit. And, I'm sorry he wasn't here in camp, but he's here now. And again, they went out and signed two quarterbacks that week, not just to take snaps, but AJ being one of them. That just sent a little bit of a signal about Jake Browning. He's a Bengal. I root for him. It's just, I don't know if he's the guy to go in and over a 3-4 week period win us two games.
Yeah, he didn't even win the backup quarterback job. He just wasn't the guy that lost the backup quarterback job in preseason.
Very well put.
So, again, I wonder if, because McCarron just kind of recouping after the USFL or XFL. What league was XFL. Battlehawks?
I think he was in the XFL.
Okay, I mean now they're combined for the same league, so it doesn't matter. Yeah. But I wonder if that's why he didn't answer the phone earlier, because when Trevor Siemian, when they saw how he looked after two games, they had to pick up the phone and be like, "This isn't the guy we need. Are you ready to come back?" Because you hear everything he said, he wanted to come back to Cincinnati, which is someone that's a backup quarterback. It's kind of interesting to hear. People talked about Andy Dalton possibly coming back. I don't think he'd ever be able to come back as a backup quarterback to back up the guy who, you know, who took his job.
I don't know if Andy wants to come back. I don't think he has a problem with the city itself. I think he and, you know, he and Zach left on bad terms. And as much right. as I like Andy as a person, you know, Andy also needed to grow up a little bit about that. But
yeah, they had to take him out to make sure they lost so they could get the first overall pick.
Exactly. Ryan Finley did his job. he'll always
Andy
be
beat
a
the Steelers. So that's, you know,
he beat the Steelers and he got us Joe Burrow. So and really it was that win on Monday night against the Steelers, the Von Bell Juju Schuster fumble that really kind of changed, you know, turned things around. I think, you know, a light seemed to go on because they won the next week. Yeah. They got blown out the final game against the Ravens, which John Harbaugh seems to forget, you know, as he ran up the score and then whined a year later when the Bengals did the same, but he's good at that. You know, that those weeks really started to set the table for the franchise. And I think the franchise is in a good position. I think it's moving forward. I just really think, you know, man, I think they put all their chips on this year as being a powerful team to go to and win the Super Bowl. And that's why being 1-3 is so frustrating and hurts so much.
Absolutely. I think for a lot of the younger players on the team, the win against Pittsburgh was kind of a proof of concept, you know, with Zach Taylor. Like, listen, this guy, like, Bengals never win on primetime games. They never beat Pittsburgh. You know, there's so many narratives, like, that normally Pittsburgh just comes in and just absolutely steamrolls them with whenever the game's in primetime. And the Bengals with a third-string quarterback, I mean, Brandon Allen was, you know, wasn't available that game. Like, came out and Von Bell absolutely punched Smith-Schuster in the mouth, which was fantastic to see. And yeah, that I think that was the proof of concept when the younger players started believing, like the Tyler Boyds and the Joe Mixon, the guys that have been around for a few years before Taylor, like, okay, this, you know, this guy, you know, we're going to be okay. So
there is a confidence and a respect that I think the franchise had that it lacked before. And really it probably lacked since Boomer Esiason was the full-time starter here. And Joe Burrow brings that. He's a different personality than Boomer, but he brings that. He brings the credibility. He brings the talent. He's special. And a great quarterback can overcome other deficiencies on your football team. He can do that. And he will do that, and he will do that again. You know, I'm hoping the calf isn't the type of injury that he's not going to be 100% till, you know, next March or April. I'm hoping he'll be that way by November.
Yeah,
it'd be great if he was Sunday. I don't know about Sunday. He says he keeps feeling back to back. We'll know. I really think, and Jimmy and I were talking about this because he noticed the same thing against the Rams. I think they had like a 3rd-and-6. We were on our own 40. And I'm in an end zone. I'm in the north end zone. And he was in the pocket. And the protection was fairly good. And a hole opened up in front of him. And Joey had the ball high and tight. And he brought it down. And he took about 2 steps forward, I think out of instinct. And then it clicked in. I'm not supposed to be doing that. And he put it up. There was nothing there, and he threw the ball away. He could have easily run for a first down. Easily run for a first down. When we start to see him running for first downs, when we start to see him scrambling, we'll know he's better. So far as the deep passes, he claims he can practice all the throws that he needs to throw. Just for whatever reason, they're either not calling him, or on the rare occasion that they haven't worked.
Yeah, the Ravens game, he was actually, he made a couple, I know he made at least one first down run on a scramble. The second half of that game looked almost like a somewhat normal Joe Burrow. Yeah, he wasn't hitting deep passes, but he looked like almost like Joe Burrow. And until at the very end when he tweaked his calf again and it, you know, was gun shy. I mean, they figured out a functional offense for the second half of the Rams game, but My concern with him going forward is how much of his mechanics are going to be jacked up this year, because he just had to use his upper body to generate power for downfield throws. That, I mean, that's why he's so accurate. The ball can get there, they're just so inaccurate. So even if the calf gets back to normal, how long is it going to take? And I'm not worried about 2024. He'll, you know, if his mechanics get all screwed up this year, they'll be at, looking absolutely sterling by training camp. But even if he gets the calf under control in it and it gets back to almost normal, is that going to be an issue going forward? To where, you know, to where his intermediate to deep accuracy, and his intermediate accuracy, that would literally be superhuman. That's what made him better than every other quarterback in the NFL, was being able to hit the shots, you know, in the second level intermediate routes. Is his accuracy going to be kind of on and off all season long because of having to change his mechanics? And that's a concern of mine.
I think he's very, everything you read, he's very, very mindful, if not obsessive,
yeah,
about his mechanics and studying himself and improving himself. I don't think, you know, purposely he's going to let that happen. You know, it's been a concern of mine. My main concern with it came to injury was he was not going to be able to scramble, evade pride. He's very good at that. You know, they don't give him a lot of credit for that nationally, but he's very good at not necessarily scrambling for yards the way Lamar Jackson is, but scrambling out of trouble, buying that extra second or two and hitting a guy. Now this year, buying that extra second or two, whereas last year or 2 years ago, meant CJ Uzama, Hayden Hurst, P. Ryan for a zip of 4 to 6 yards, and then they would run for another 4 or 5. That's not happening this year. Tight end has been a disappointment. It's almost, sometimes it feels like we're playing with 10 guys on third and long, or when the tight end should be there. But I'm more concerned about him being able to scramble out of problems or scramble ahead, you know, to get us that first down than his mechanics. I think he will monitor that. And I think if that's the case and the Bengals see that in film, you know, Zach's the quarterback whisperer, Brian Callahan's, you know, coached quarterbacks, and Dan Pitcher's known as one of the better quarterback coaches in the league. I don't think they'll allow it.
Yeah, I mean, the Bengals, from the front office down, it's just completely loaded with quarterbacks. Mike Brown played quarterback at Dartmouth. Duke Tobin was a quarterback. Zach Taylor was a quarterback. Dan Pitcher is the quarterback coach. Brian Callahan. Like, it's, if there's any team that, you know, is set up to, you know, to iron out small little issues and everything, it's them. It's just kind of a nagging concern because because the accuracy on the deep ball hasn't been there, that, you know, that he is. I mean, he even said he's having to use more upper body to push the ball downfield because he can't push off, can't plant his back foot as strong, you know, as he's used to. The other issue that I have with, and again, this isn't complaining about, this isn't like bitching about Joe Burrow. I mean, even when the protection has been there, he's not trusting it because he can't, I don't think he feels like he can physically step up in the pocket or slide, escape in the pocket and scrambling, you know, or even on bootlegs or anything like that, but just the small movements that makes him so great, just manipulating the pocket, the stuff that Tom Brady did for 20 years, just the small little movements to create that window. It seems like he doesn't trust his calf to put, you know, to push up, to make that step, to find that open window. So he's dumping it down, you know, just taking quick little dump offs that are covered, you know, instead of trying to find that little window. And I don't know if it's because he can't or he's afraid.
I think the tackle position has been some better. I don't think it's been as good as they expected it on pass protecting.
Jonah Williams has been really, really good. I think he's been the best offensive lineman.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope Jonah came to grips with, you don't have to be a left tackle to make big bucks in the NFL. You know, with your contract on the line, you know, there were mediocre right tackles signing $17, $18 million a year contracts last year. Yeah. So, you know, if he keeps doing that, he's going to get his money at the end of the year. No, I think he's doing fine. I don't know if he's playing at a Pro Bowl level, but he's doing fine. I think Orlando Brown, I don't want to say disappointment, because there have been games and series that I thought, you know, he does look like that Pro Bowler, all-pro type that we signed and that we've seen. And then there have been, you know, certain plays that he has not. What's concerned me in the passing game is the middle.
Yeah.
And it seems like when from guard to guard, they get pushed back into Joe, that's when he panics. And, you know, we're firing that ball out of bounds. You know, we don't even worry about the check down, or if we do have the check down, he hits it and, you know, boom, it's a 3-yard gain. Yep. Or, you know, yeah, you know, it's one thing, you know, if I could talk to Zach, if we could go easy on the screens, please. You know, or it's a screen pass that they're, you know, Travion Williams is fighting to get back to the line of scrimmage. But yeah, the pass protection from the middle, it seems like the middle has been getting pushed back into him. And again, if he has his wheels, he's scrambling away for that and finding somebody. But it's also that we miss production for the tight end position.
Yeah, and some of the issues that sacks that are – there have been a couple of sacks that have been attributed to Orlando Brown. Those are ones that if the interior offensive line had just been able to just hold their ground. There was one where he ran the defensive end 9 yards past the line of scrimmage. I basically just ran him around, and he still got the sack because Burrow had to retreat in the pocket because I think all three of the Kapuvolson and Karras, all three gave up so much ground that easy target for an easy sack for the end. I've never been one that's had a ton of hope for Kordell-Volson. He was an older prospect when they drafted him. He was 24 years old, went to a small school and was drafted in the middle round. And he won the job by default because Jackson Carman was flaming hot garbage. And a lot of people have, you know, and there's a lot of guys that break down film, do an awesome job on social media, especially for the Bengals, guys like Willie Lutz, Parker Blake. And they've been kind of banging the drum for Volson. Like, oh, he's going to be like, I don't understand. Like, explain to me what I'm missing. Again, he's small school, so it's not as if he was playing offensive guard in the SEC or the Big Ten. He was playing against South Dakota State and, you know, other 1AA school or at FCS.
Sometimes you can get a gem in the draft later on.
Yeah,
somebody was very close to me back in the 80s and through the 90s till he moved to Georgia, and we stayed even pretty close then until his death, was Jerry Jones. Not the owner of the Cowboys.
The draft guy, yeah.
But the draft guru, Jerry Jones, who really was one of the guys that helped set up and develop that whole industry. I mean, he was doing as Bill Walsh said, Jerry was into the draft and diagnosing the draft before it was cool. I mean, he paved the way for Mel Kiper Jr. to become a millionaire. And so forth. And Jerry always said, you know, you can find those gems later on in the offense line. But he said, if you're going to draft a lineman, you better get him in those first 100 picks. And that was, you know, before the last round of expansion. So, you know, Kordell-Volson is a fourth round pick. Obviously, they valued him higher than that. I really thought if he's going to become something, he would need to show it this year. I think, again, the season starts anew. You know, when you've played Aaron Donald and Jeffrey Simmons and Myles Garrett dancing all up and down the line the way – I mean, the Browns were simply – Cleveland outcoached us in week one, along with everything
that
else.
I don't
want to hear about the if the next person that tells me, well, it rained. No, all those guys have played in the rain. The Browns played in the rain, too. No.
Yeah.
But,
no,
you know,
they were embarrassed. Absolutely embarrassed.
Myles Garrett – Jeffrey Simmons, Aaron Donald, three of your first 4 weeks. You know, it's not going to be easy. So, you know, I'm anxious to see how he does from here on. But, you know, if it doesn't get better by the end of the year, certainly left guard goes right back up there as a major need. But they – go ahead, Joe.
I was going to say, they're awful at drafting offensive linemen. And at some point – when are they going to realize that what are they looking at? Like, they're looking at more for like traits than they are physical attributes. Like, they're looking for, I don't know if they're looking for leaders or they're looking for, you know, guys to score a certain thing on the Wonderlic or something. You look at the best offensive linemen, most of them are guys that grade out of the top of the scale for the raw athletic scores. You know, the guys that are in the nines, you know, eights and nines. Bengals draft guys that are sixes and sevens and expect them to, you know, you have Myles Garrett that.
Yeah.
You got some like Myles Garrett that it's that big, that fast. Even the best are going to struggle. But if you got a guy that doesn't have the athletic ability, that doesn't have the quick feet, or the strength to anchor, if he goes for a power move or something, you have zero hope.
I think in Miles' case, it's defensive end is a little bit like cornerback. You need a year of experience. Keep in mind, you're playing in the ACC. Miles is a phenomenal athlete. I think he's a phenomenal athlete. But the best in the ACC isn't going to be mediocre in the NFL. And I think he's finding that. Now, he had some pretty good – he was credited with a sack last week, and he hit some pretty good sacks. I think he'll come along, and I think he's going to be fine. I mentioned Jerry Jones, and Jerry said the most difficult position for him to grade and forecast was always a pass rusher, a defensive end, what kind of pass rusher they were going to turn into and into the NFL. With regards to the offensive lineman, I've talked to Willie Anderson about this a couple times. Willie normally just laughs at me because I get, like you, I get so frustrated. But I've talked to Willie Anderson, and I've talked to one offensive line coach. And he's not with the Bengals, but the offensive line coach told me, he said, the looking glass for offensive linemen is so different now as opposed to 20 years ago, because the college game is always in front of the NFL, and everybody in the college game went to the spread 15 years ago. Now you're seeing more and more NFL teams doing it, but not everybody. And it's tough to grade. It's just like a quarterback. Quarterbacks are all playing in those spread offenses. It's tough to grade an offensive lineman because of the systems they had. Joe Burrow came into the league. One of the great things about Joe Burrow was he played in a pro system in LSU. I mean, that was an NFL system stamped all over it.
Absolutely.
He was ready to go. And, they had the best line in football. It's probably the best offense in the history of college football his senior year when he went to Heisman. So I think it's a lot more difficult to forecast what an offensive lineman is going to turn into. But, they're running out of cap space to be able to throw money at the position. They're going to have to be able to draft and develop it. And, that's another – they're going to need a cornerback this coming off season. They need to start thinking about offensive center, which, don't get me started on that. We could have had the Chiefs center instead of Jackson Carmen. Yeah. But nonetheless they're going to have to start learning about center. They may absolutely need a left guard. Are we going to keep pussyfooting around a tight end, or just either, in the first two rounds, say we're getting somebody that can solidify this position and give Joe Burrow a legitimate weapon. So, there are holes that have developed that we've seen because they're not playing well, but I think they're going to improve. And like I said, as long as they improve and it's not too late.
Yeah, I'm not worried about. I mean, they've got a really rough schedule in the second half of the season, but the schedule. I mean, we don't want to go back to Mark Duffner. They got to play us stuff again. But the offense, I and the defense is going to be ironed out and going to be looking good. It's whether or not those games are going to matter is the major concern. I sure as heck hope so. The offensive line is the fifth highest paid offensive line by cap space in the NFL. And that does not look like that at all. It's because they haven't been able to draft well. So they've got three high paid free agents. And then, Jonah, fine. He's on his fifth year option. So that's why he's got a relatively higher price tag, but for starting right tackle isn't bad, but yeah, they need to figure out how to draft. It's really frustrating. I'm going to pull up a couple slides here to kind of highlight the Bengals offensive issues here. This is just the team rankings overall for where they are on offense. 31st in rush yards per game, only averaging 70 yards a game. They're never going to be high on that because they don't, outside of one or two games a year, they're not going to stress the run game. I'm okay with that if the offense is humming. The issue is they're 29th in the league in passing yards per game, averaging a paltry 166 per. It's, you look at teams out there that are limited on talent, which the Bengals clearly are not limited on talent, and you're seeing how other teams are able to scheme guys open or able to navigate around that. Puka Nacua is a fifth-round pick from BYU, and the only game that when he didn't, you know, he didn't get a ton of catches was the Bengals game. He's got something like 35 catches. This is a nobody kid that drafted in middle to late rounds, and the Rams are able to find ways to scheme him open. You look at the Commanders' offense. Sam Howell, maybe he's going to be a decent quarterback. I don't know. He's not Joe Burrow. He's not like a hobbled Joe Burrow. 32 teams would take over Sam Howell. They've got a couple good receivers, but Terry McLaurin, Jahan Dotson aren't T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase. They're finding ways to scheme those guys open and to have a functional passing game. I'm frustrated more than anything else, besides the defense not looking great. I'm frustrated with the lack of creativity that the, you know, that the offense has shown. And again, I don't know if this is Burrow doesn't want to run these plays, doesn't want to do this, so we're just going to run this, or being Zach Taylor and Brian Callahan being stubborn. What are your thoughts? Like, the one game when they showed creativity was the Rams game. They used a lot of motion in that game, and it worked. Ja'Marr Chase was getting free releases because starting his route in motion, or, you know, off the line of scrimmage, so he wasn't getting touched, or he was starting in the backfield. What are your thoughts on who's, like, why are they not being, trying more creativity? Why are they not, like, staying so vanilla with, you know, with their scheme as it is?
I think the creativity is essential, because creativity is going to find ways to get Ja'Marr Chase the ball, and they're going to need it Sunday, because with no T. Higgins, guess what? He's going to be doubled, and you're left with Trenton Irwin or a rookie in Yosevich, who I like a lot.
Love that
but
guy.
Still, nonetheless, a rookie. And I think he's going to be, there he is. I think he can be a very solid starter. And then the reason we had those two draft picks this year was when we had either T or Ja'Marr go down, which was inevitably going to happen over the year, everybody didn't have to run around with their hair on fire. Oh, my God, what are we going to do?
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, Yoshi can be that guy. But yeah, you have to be creative, because your quarterback can't be creative right now. So they're going to have to do weird stuff with Ja'Marr to get him open, to get the ball in his hands, and not the jet sweeps,
yeah,
not the delayed screens, not him drumming his feet at the line of scrimmage and turning around to catch the ball. You know, the other teams do have players too. So yeah, creativity is necessary. I think a lot of the creativity has been limited due to Joe's injury.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this isn't the offense that they want to have, but at some point, like, you're not going to scrap your entire, you know, your entire playbook because your quarterback's limited, but you do need to throw some wrinkles in there. And I don't want them to wait until the bye week when they've got an extra week to work on stuff. This is as, if they lose this game, I mean, the season's over, I think, if they lose this game.
It's not over, but it's going to be very difficult to find a way out of the hole they dug themselves in.
Seahawks just sacked quarterback 11 times. So you're facing that pass rush. Now, granted, they only had 5 sacks in the rest of the season, but then you come out of the bye and you've got San Francisco. That they look like the best team in the league. I mean, they're making Brock Purdy look like he's Joe frickin' Montana out there. I still don't believe in Brock Purdy. I think it's I think he's still a product of absolutely great coaching and a ton of talent around him and creative game plans. But
that's a system, a quarterback, you know, system, quarterback friendly system.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, until he falls on his face, you know, they said the same thing about Joe Montana, his whole career, and that's when we fight for Kenny Anderson getting the Hall of Fame. Some of the voters, and again, another subject, I got to watch my blood pressure. When we talk to some of the Hall of Fame voters, the first, well, you know, Bill Walsh was his coach.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if Brock Purdy can run that system, he may run them right to another Lombardi Trophy for the Bay Area. So yeah, but yeah, they're incredibly good on defense. They and the Eagles are two absolutely complete teams.
Yeah, it's funny how they use Bill Walsh's his coach against him, but they don't use that against Joe Montana or Steve Young when they also had greatest wide receiver in NFL history. And another stout defense, so that, you know, it's frustrating. One of the other problems that the offense has had, again, outside of Burrow, and maybe it's just an issue with the team completely being out of sync. They've had 10 drop passes in 4 games. T. Higgins, I've said this before, and I don't think it's the case, like, that it's necessarily the case. But he's got the same agent that Jesse Bates had. Bates admitted freely that during his fourth year, it was 2021, he struggled the first half of the year because he was thinking too much about the money, thinking too much about his contract. And I don't know if that's what's happening with T, but it sure looks like it because he's looked pretty bad. He had the one good game against Baltimore, but 8 catches, 89 yards, 2 touchdowns, but outside of that, I mean, he's had 4 drops, only 12 catches. I'm not going to say that he's not out there trying. I'm not going to say that he's like, you know, not trying to go all out, you know, because he doesn't want to get hurt or anything like that. Because that's absolutely not the case. But you just worry if he's feeling the pressure of needing to absolutely perform because, like, yeah, he's probably going to get the franchise tag after this year, but he's, you know, he's still out there playing for a big contract. And you wonder if it is that the case or just the whole offense being out of sync and just nobody, you know, the ball isn't coming out.
I don't think it's T's contract. I think he had an uncaster, you know, of those 4 drops, 3 of them came against the Rams and you're right. They were awful. Yeah. That game, you know, the Bengals won that game with a little to spare, but T catches 2 of those 3 in particular, and it's a totally different game. We might even been able to pull Joe Burrow, being ahead. I think it'll be, you know, of course last week, you know, he's got the fractured rib. We won't see him this week. I don't think.
Probably.
Yeah, you're right. His agent, Darth Vader. he's pure evil. He's never worked out a contract with the Bengals for an extension or a free agent. I had heard that actually at the last minute before he signed with Atlanta that we almost got Jesse back.
Really?
Jesse was not get me out of here. I hate it. The Bengals came through with a very, very solid offer, not as high as the Falcons, but a very, very good offer. Not with the guaranteed percentage of the Falcons, and Jesse had to take a minute and decide. But had they done that, we wouldn't have gotten Orlando Brown, which I still think is a good pickup.
Yeah, that was more of a position of need than a safety when they had, and I don't think they had any thoughts that Von Bell was going to leave. I think that they thought Von Bell and P. Ryan and even Hurst, to that matter, I think they were absolutely gobsmacked when those guys signed us, but I don't blame them. But
well, I think they knew about Hurst. I think they were hopeful about Vaughn, and again, I think that a lot of that had to do with Orlando Brown.
Yeah,
and it was just, you know, this is how much is going to be, you know, Lou. We know we told you we'd at least keep one. Sorry, you know, and that was his nightmare insignia. And I don't necessarily know that that's lost us any games yet, but it was sure frustrating against Baltimore, and it was sure frustrating last week.
Yeah. But you know, back to the agent, David Mulligetta, he's getting a bad reputation as someone who, if you have one of his clients and you're trying to negotiate an extension, it's not going to happen. He has a rough history with Cincinnati. I don't want to say it's anything personal or anything. Just Bengals are still conservative. I mean, Burrow very much broke the mold of their contracts. They still don't like guaranteeing a ton of money. The players still get, you know, a large portion of their contracts. And I'm hoping that that's just it. And it's nothing personal, but it's not just with the Bengals, with guys, you know, when he's got clients that are trying to negotiate an extension with teams, it they end up just going to free agency. It's like, it's almost like Scott Boras in baseball. He wants the guys to get on the open market because that's when you're going to get the more money. And at some point, you got to ask, is that the best for the player or is that the best for your portfolio as an agent?
I think with T, he will get tagged.
Yep.
And whether they tag and trade him or just tag him and say, you're our guy. I mean, he's so young. I think he's only 24.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully at the end of the year, he's going to say, you know what, turning 25 now, I've had, you know, two injuries in my career. I don't want it to happen again and really water down my value. You know, let's get a good deal here in Cincinnati. And, you know, if the Bengals are willing to guarantee him by tagging him $23 to $26 million next year, they're probably willing to do that. You know, there was that rumbling in during week one that they offered him an average of $31 million a year. Just wasn't guaranteed at that amount, but $31 million a year.
That's a pretty good chunk of change. And they don't, they have room in the budget to pay him and to pay Jamar, especially with what, you know, you look at the way that the contracts are structured. Burrow doesn't start making big money until 25 or six. Chase isn't going to make his big money until the following year because he's got the 5th year option built in. And you know, and you structure Higgins' year, like you're only going to have 1 year. I don't think you'd want to extend T more than like 3 years, maybe four, but there's money to pay all those guys and still have room left over to, you know, to, so you're not hamstrung with three superstars and then 19 starters that are draft picks and vet minimum salaries.
The Bengals front office led by Katie, you don't have to worry about, you know, the whatever, the crystal ball being broken when it comes to what is going to be available on the salary cap. You know, I believe it's 2027. Is that the year Joe is getting $71 million of his total contract? It's either 27 or 28.
So.
He's getting $71 million of it, you know, to keep it down. So yeah, they can keep T and they can keep Jamar, but they're going to be much for anything else. You know, don't look for him then to be able to go out and buy a starting tight end or a right tackle. Or keep my, you know, next year we're going to be looking probably for a new nose tackle, and DJ Reader I think is probably to me the most important player on that defense.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there are going to be holes this offseason, but you know, I'd like to see the ship righted now, and I think that's what they're focused on.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not when Burrow is. If he gets healthy at some point during this season, I'm not worried about about how the team's going to be able to perform. It's, you want to make sure that these games at the end of the season, when they are, you know, when he is looking like Joe Burrow, that they still mean something. Another big issue, you know, we'll go talk over the defensive side again. And we talked about Cam Britt. Helps if I get on the right slide. There we go. He's had a rough start to the season. He's allowing, again, it depends on who you're looking at. One of the sites I looked at said he was averaging 17 yards per catch with 108 yard passer rating. This is from PFF. He's allowed 19.5 yards per catch when he's the nearest defender with 108 passer rating, only one pass breakup. I think it's probably just a little sophomore slide, but they're not passing or they're not facing high octane offenses. And that's kind of the concern is when they do face teams, you know, they have to face the Bills. They have to face the Chiefs. You want to make sure this stuff gets ironed out. On the other slide, but they're not getting any push from the interior of the defensive line. BJ Hill and Zach Carter pretty much been irrelevant on the pass rush. And I had high hopes for Zach Carter. Last year, he kind of was positionless. They wanted to move him to the inside, but he had a lot of weight to put on, and you know, he didn't really get a lot of play. He looked great to me in preseason. I really thought he was going to, you know, be the Larry Ogunjobi to BJ Hill that they had in 21, and he's been absolutely just invisible out there. It's only been Trey Hendrickson and Trey Hendrickson alone who's getting consistent push. Obviously, that needs to change. Getting Osai fully healthy. I mean, he didn't play a whole lot of snaps the last two games when he has been active. Sam Hubbard's going to get sacks, but he's not a pass rush specialist. I think Miles Murphy's, as the year goes on, he's going to end up getting more and more pressures again. They kind of knew that he was going to be, not that this year was going to be a redshirt year, but they drafted him with 2024 in mind. But I, as the season goes on, I think he's going to be more and more of a force, especially if they keep moving him to the inside on third downs.
In their history, the one position that has eluded this franchise is that front seven player that was a game wrecker. The closest they've ever had was Geno Atkins, but Geno was an interior guy. He wasn't the pure pass rusher. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. He will go into the Hall of Fame. Hopefully, Absolutely. It won't be a long wait, but based on those geniuses, who knows?
Yeah.
But they haven't had that, Lawrence Taylor, Bruce Smith type of guy. The two closest players they have were Geno Smith and probably Mike Reed.
Yeah.
And I think that has been the one element missing. You look at Trey Hendrickson, he's done great things here. I was very happy with his extension. I think he was too. He seems to like it here. Everybody down there seems to like it here. But they are missing that impact. I remember when Tom Brady said, they asked Tom Brady, what's essential for a winner? And he said, protect the quarterback and get to the quarterback. And they're not getting to the quarterback. They are not wrecking the other team's offense. And they're giving everybody that one extra second they need for the quarterback to scamper for a win, like against Baltimore, or that extra second they need to complete the pass over the middle, like Baltimore, like Cleveland, like Tennessee. So they know what they have to improve on. I think so the rest of that will come. And, and in terms of Cam Taylor-Britt, I watched him do it last year. I think he can still do it this year. But the best remedy to help your pass coverage is a good pass rush.
Absolutely.
The best way to help your pass rush is good pass coverage. So it's the ultimate team sport.
Yeah, I mean, those two absolutely go hand in hand. If you have guys getting free downfield, it doesn't matter if you have Lawrence Taylor and Aaron Donald and Myles Garrett all on the same line. They're still going to throw the ball all over you if there's guys running free through in the secondary. So I think their hope is Myles Murphy has those traits, and he absolutely has the traits, his size and speed, like his get off, how quickly he gets off the ball on the snap is insane. It's almost Myles Garrett like. He's got incredible speed. He's still, he's going to need to refine some more pass rush skills. And again, just kind of figure out how to put forth full effort, on every snap. I think the floor for him is Carlos Dunlap, a guy who's going to get you 10, 12 sacks a season, but should be giving you more. I don't think he's going to be that absolute game record that they have to game plan against, but I think that he's got those traits and we'll find out. I mean, it'll take a few years for any of that to materialize, but we'll see. What do you give just kind of like a overall review? What do you give the offense grade wise, A, B, C, D, F for D. First four games?
D. What's that?
Say
D.
Again, graded on a curve. They haven't performed well, but they do get a little bit of benefit of the doubt because they've got a quarterback who's he may be at 80% health, but in terms of his capability and his, the playbook that's available, maybe at 50%. What about the defense?
Probably a very weak C. Just because one, the expectations were more, and like we've just gone over, pass rush hasn't been what it needs to be. Pass coverage has been pretty good on first and second down, but boy, they sure have holes on third down. And the tackling was miserable last week, and it wasn't all that great against Cleveland or Baltimore. So yeah, a very weak C. And special teams right in there too. Mac didn't miss a kick, even though he was he got a game ball against the Rams. And Brad Robbins until last week was, we were talking in the stands at the Rams game. It's a good thing Drew Chrisman doesn't live too far. they've really got to figure something out there. But I think, you know, hopefully he'll be back. I don't know. We'll have to see. He'll have a week to prove it out in the heat this week.
Yeah. Historically, rookie punters don't fare really well. The one positive, I would say positive, I don't, not really anything positive, but the one thing about Robbins, his punch, like, they weren't getting any distance, but they weren't returnable. There is a lot of fair catches. I mean, even though it's only 41 yards and a net of 41, Drew Chrisman was kicking these absolute line drives. I mean, his punt against the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game cost them more than Joseph Osai's penalty.
Oh, it cost him his job.
Yeah, exactly.
I think if he makes that punt, I don't think they're necessarily looking for a guy. It absolutely cost him his job. He never recovered from that.
Absolutely. I'm not happy with the results of Robbins, but I'm not as concerned because, again, he had a fantastic game, average 52 yards a punt, somewhere 51, 52 yards a punt against the Titans. And again, he kicks. They're not going to get a lot of returns on him because exactly. He has so much hang time.
Yep.
And I'm fine with that. When it comes to punts, give me a punt returner that fair catches the ball and hands the ball to the ref, and give me a punter that the other team has to fair catch the ball and hand it to the ref. Outside, like, I'm cool. You want someone, I mean, there's some of these punters that are, you know, averaging 55, 57 yards a punt. I mean, Tennessee's punters, like, has that absolute, like, cannon leg. And you know, that nice to have that weapon, but give me someone reliable that's just not going to give up the long return, and give me a punt returner that's just going to hand the ball to the official. That being said, Charlie Jones, before he went out, absolutely looks like a guy who's going to be dangerous for a long time as a punt returner. I don't want to say down on him, but he looked really rough in preseason. He couldn't make anybody miss at all. First guy that came to him, first contact that he had, he was going down, and he wasn't able to wiggle out of any tackles on any punt return. So I'm like, maybe this guy's going to take a year before he does anything. Well, lo and behold, he runs the 81-yard punt return back in week two. And since that moment, every punt return he's had, the last two games, you're kind of holding your breath, you know, waiting. If he makes this, you know, he makes one move, he's gone. So I think I'd give probably a C+. McPherson has two misses, I think. They're both over 50.
The coverage, so, by and large, has been pretty good.
Yeah. I don't even know how many. There hasn't been a lot of kickoff. Bengals haven't scored a lot of points for there to be a lot of kickoffs to begin
off,
with.
You know, we've been punting, but not kicking off.
Right. They're not getting a lot of punt returns. McPherson's 7 for 9. His both of his misses were, 55+. He can make those, but he's also,
I think Mac would have to completely fall apart to not be the Bengals kicker for the long term. I mean, he's made more big game clutch kicks than any kicker, you know, in our history. You know, Jim Breach was undefeated in overtime games, and I think he ended, might have even been 12 games. You know, Jim Breach ended at overtime, and that's not counting how many he ended at the gun. So, Mac's fine. He's going to miss one occasionally, but he's good. He's our kicker, and I'm happy that he is our kicker.
Yeah, I mean, he's perfect in under 40 and 2 of 4, 50+. I mean, he'll be the first one to say that he should have hit those kicks. And I don't even know what an acceptable percentage over 50 yards is. Before McPherson, it was, 10%? That's what you expect? From Nugent didn't have the leg. Randy Bullock's calves would seize.
Yeah. His right calf would seize, but then he'd grab his left one. the Eagles were still laughing at us for that. But, it's more like 55, because, you know, my God, guys are hitting 60 yarders like it was nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just absolutely nothing. There's no, you know, Tom Dempsey's record of 63 yards stood forever, it seemed like. And then, you know, now guys are regularly breaking it. You know, go down early to a game, They're rifling him through with no pass rush, but 65 yards. So, yeah, not a big deal.
I think when, and I don't, you were in the stands or might not even have been in the stadium at that point. They said Tucker was hitting over 70 yards in week two at Paycor. That dude's a freak. I mean, there's good kickers, and then there's Justin Tucker. I mean, he hits the 66-yarder that doinks off the crossbar to win a game last year, and he's the greatest kicker in the history of the league. Absolutely.
He's the greatest kicker in the history of the league.
And, of course, he's on a rival team, so. Although Chris Boswell is the greatest kicker in the history of the league when it comes to playing the Bengals. I think he missed his first kicks last year against the – like, I don't – his numbers against the Bengals are ridiculous. Like, they dwarf Justin Tucker's. I mean, Justin Tucker's at least missed a few kicks. Boswell was literally automatic for years. And
Justin Tucker's range at Paycor Stadium is when they get off the bus. I mean, he's phenomenal. He's the best kicker in the history of the game.
Could you imagine him kicking at Denver? I mean, they would probably put him out to try. It's like the end of the half, they'd probably put him out to try a 75-yarder, and I would not be surprised if he made it.
Yeah, I remember when Lee Johnson was the Bengals' long-distance kicker, and when Dick LeBeau was coaching, and he sent him out, I think, to try a 61-yarder right before halftime, and it got blocked and returned for a touchdown. Dick LeBeau said, yeah, don't look for me to try that again. That didn't work.
I forgot about Lee Johnson kicking the long field goals. That is right. That was that Doug Pelfrey?
It would have been probably the Pelfrey era. Yeah.
I think it's a good kicker, but he didn't have a very long leg. So
yeah, we've had a lot of, you know, really, you know, Shane Graham went to the Pro Bowl. Shane Graham was a good kicker. Mike Nugent was a good kicker.
Very good kicker.
Pelfrey was a good kicker. I mean, you know, Breach led the league in scoring several times. Horst Muehlmann was one of the first soccer style kickers in the league.
That's the greatest
pretty,
name.
Pretty much. Horst Muehlmann, that is a cool name. There's a Trumpy in his book told a great story about Horst Muehlmann, that being because he was little and he was from Europe, the guys picked on him, for lack of a better term. And they're up in Wilmington one night and they're bored. And one of them's holding the door to Horst's room. He can't get out. And he's yelling at him that he knows they're out there. And they're like, Horst, there's something wrong with the door. It's, you know, it's not functioning right. You know, sorry, it's broke. We'll get somebody down here and get it fixed. And he starts screaming at him that he had to tinkle. And they thought, you know, he was just saying that to let him out. So they're listening, and a minute later, they hear the splattering, and they look at each other, open the door, and he'd taken a drawer out and gone to the bathroom in a drawer. And he looked at it mad and stomped up to Paul Brown's office to tell him that a bunch of his big football players had trapped him in his room when he had to tinkle. And I guess PB fought off, smiled, nodded, and promised him it would be addressed. So
you can just see kind of Paul Brown just kind of holding back a smirk. Yeah. Oh, horse.
So those, when you read books about it, he had a pretty good sense of humor. So does Mike Brown. Brown has a pretty good sense of humor, but you know, Paul did too, but he was definitely all business on the football field and the practice field.
We're very well aware of Mike Brown's sense of humor, 'cause we see how he dresses. I think he wears the same wardrobe that Paul Brown, would wear 30 some odd years after his death. So
I don't remember ever seeing Mike, at least in this century, in a fedora, but you know, I think back in the day he did.
Yeah.
But he's good.
Real quick, do a quick preview of the game, on Sunday, 4:00 in the desert versus the Cardinals. Offensive keys to me, it's simple. What they need to do is, it's what they should be doing this week in practice. Figure out what they do well. Figure out what they have, what's been successful this year, and base a game plan around that. Whether it's motion, whether, you know, we know Burrow doesn't like all the motion, but whether it's that or, you know, whatever runs have been successful. I really think they just need to simplify this week and run a simplified game plan that's just, you know, what has worked so far, because they're not playing a Cardinals have been more competitive than people thought. I mean, everyone thought that they were going to tank, like, that they just won Caleb Williams' number one pick next year, and they've played a lot harder. I mean, it was a surprise that they beat Dallas and beat them by two scores, like 28-14 or 28-16. But they're still not a very talented team. You look up and down the roster. James Conner is pretty much the only starter that they have that I think is comparable to what we have on the Bengals. We've got the better quarterback. Marquise Brown, like, their wide receivers are having decent seasons, but no one's taking Marquise Brown over anybody on the Bengals. Michael Wilson, their other receiver, he's having a good season, but again, not a guy that would start. I think Zach Ertz might be the only guy they had that would start.
It's completely up to us. It's completely up to the Bengals. On paper, we're a 13 or 14 win team. But that team certainly has not come to play yet. My hope is they can effectively run the ball a little better. I like Joe much more third and three, third and two, third and one than I like him in third and six. So I'd like him to be able to mix in those runs a little bit more. And it's also going to be 100 degrees on Sunday out there. I think you know, I've got some friends going out there, and they said the temperatures the next 4 days are going to be 98, 99, 101, and 100. So, yeah, I'm hoping they can run the ball, keep the defense rested. Defense was on the field a ton last week.
Yeah.
They still got to be tired. So, you know, we can keep the ball, use it that way. We're not going to have T. Higgins. So we'll see what the Cardinals have dialed up and what the Bengals are going to be responding with. If we play our best game with the guys we have and the Cardinals play their best game with the guys they have, I think the Bengals win, you know, not a blowout, but comfortably.
Oh, absolutely. Again, it's just, I mean, Joshua Dobbs, everyone was laughing that he was going to start the season as their starter. I mean, they got rid of Colt, or they dumped Colt McCoy for, you know. So it's, you know, when you look at talent compared to talent, it, you know, it shouldn't be even. I think Mixon's going to have a pretty good game. His season has been, again, his numbers look Mixon-ish when you look at yards of carry. It's 4.2, which is pretty much around. I mean, his career is 4.1, so he's right where he should be. But his issue has been, and maybe not his issue, the offense's issue, has been efficiency. He's getting a 15-yard run and then getting stuffed the next two times, or getting 8-yard runs and then 2 yards, 2 yards. He's never going to be the explosive back. Unfortunately, he never was the explosive back. I mean, his longest carry in his career is, 67 yards, and that's been years since he had that, and that wasn't even a touchdown for that matter. But I think he's going to have a more efficient game, even if it's just 75, 80 yards. They're not going to commit to the run. They're not going to run the ball 30, 40 times. The offensive linemen they have, they can run behind the left side of the line. Brown and Volson are true run blocking, road graders, but as a whole, the offensive line is built to pass block. So it's not like they're going to go in and try to run it 40 times like they did against the Panthers last year. I hope that they use, if T is out, and I think he probably will be. I think it'll be a game time. I think he's going to try to go, and he had a couple games last year to where it was right at game time. Actually, one game I think he dressed, like, he was active and he didn't even play a snap. I think it was against Tennessee or something. I hope that they use Yosivas, because he can replace the physical part of what makes T. Higgins great. He's a large-bodied receiver. He's 6'3", and he's similar.
He can go up and build, get the ball, too.
Yeah, he can high point the ball. He's faster. I think he's got more of an ability after the catch because he's a quicker guy. I mean, that guy's a freak athlete. I mean, he was a heptathlon, for crying out loud. He'll just get a pole vault and just leap over top of the secondary. And I don't expect him to be highly involved because he's a rookie and he's only played limited snaps to begin with, but I'd like to see him out there more frequently than just seeing Trenton Irwin as the other receiver, because I just think he offers more. On defense, it seems like a pretty simple game plan. Don't let James Conner run over you. He's a similar large back. He's 6'1", 233 pounds. You can't miss tackles when you have him. If the Bengals, I mean, Tyjae Spears, Bengals couldn't get a hand on him because he ran through. But Derrick Henry, if they would have been able to stop him at first contact, he wouldn't have had a big game. I mean, his biggest, the touchdown run was 29 yards. You take that away, he's got 21 carries for, 90 yards. Well, a good game, not a huge game. And if they could just, not miss all those damn tackles. So I think that's got to be the similar game plan to, do what they were able to do to Derrick Henry in years past. Just bring him down and don't let him get downhill, because then he's going to run over top of you. And then keep Marquise Brown in front of you. He's incredibly fast. He's really small receiver, 5'9", 180, same size as Tutu Atwell. And Atwell got a couple huge plays against the Bengals, one in the running game, one in the passing game. You can't let him get free. I would let him throw the ball underneath all game long and just, hope that you can get pressure without bringing extra guys to keep, to keep the linebackers and safeties in coverage. But it, they do have Zach Ertz, and he's a solid tight end, but they shouldn't have the horses to keep up. I've got them, I'm get to here. And again, I've got them winning 16-14. Again, I think McPherson is going to hit a field goal either at the gun or, second half of the fourth quarter to put them up. Obviously you've got them winning much bigger. What gives you the, what makes you think that it's going to be a more high-scoring game, at least on the Bengals side?
I just see, listening to Joe, and he knows how to respond and pressure if he physically can. I think he's going to have him on it. Listening to Jamar Chase, evidently the practices the last 2 days have been very good, very crisp. As he put it, he said mistake-free, and they need that. I'm also tired of the pre-snap penalties. But, if they can get all that calmed down, some of those drives that are stalling need to be, and one other thing, and people would laugh at me for that and say it's silly and it has nothing to do with how they are playing. And I know why he started it last year. That was to get him into rhythm. Can we win the toss and defer? I love the ball coming out of halftime. It's not that I don't like it to start the game. I just like it more coming out of halftime. So, but no, I think they've, like you said, they've got the horses, and if both teams play to their best ability, the Bengals should win.
Yeah. I get the point of trying to get the, especially it started last year when the offense was starting slow, and I understand why they would want to, get the ball first and try to put together a solid drive. And they did that until they got inside the red zone, especially down in the low red zone on Sunday. That was a good looking first drive until they got inside the 10, and then it bogged down. You couldn't settle for three there. You needed to score seven. But
yeah,
if you're expecting the offense to struggle, then yeah, I by all means kick it away. Try, either try to score late in the first half or hold them from scoring late in the first half, and then take the ball back and double up or set the tone. I understand the point. You want to start out strong, but this isn't the team right now. A team that is able to start out strong. That being said, with as limited as the passing game has been, it's going to be great that first 2 weeks when Burrow is able, like when he's back to being Joe Burrow and he's going to be able to throw on top, everyone's bringing these coverages way down and they got everybody just packed within 10, 15 yards. Nobody is respecting the deep ball. It's going to be fantastic those first two games when Burrow is actually able to throw the ball deep and just throwing the ball over top of them and they've got to throw out their entire game plan and scramble. Means they're going to blitz more, and if Burrow is able, if he's feeling good, he's going to be able to escape and step up in the pocket, avoid the blitz, and he's going to have a couple huge games. So
I just get the feeling with the pressure they're putting on themselves that he's going to try it this week. And if he says, this is the best he's felt, they're definitely going to try. And you're right, they're going to blow up somebody's game plan because everybody's mirroring what the Ravens did. What the Ratbirds did, which was Joe's throwing underneath and they let those athletic linebackers use their speed, come up, make plays, and we don't get first downs.
Yeah. yeah, you, I mean, you just pack everybody in, and it's, you know, it they're easy to game plan against because they can't do what they want to do, and they don't try to do what they're not used to doing. So, but yeah, when they get right, there's, you know, this first couple weeks are going to be huge. It's, again, it's just kind of hold down the fort. If they can get to the bye week at 500, again, this should be, I mean, this is a game that they should win. I read something that they have not won in Arizona since they moved out there. I don't know if that's true or not. I meant to look it up. I was on someone else's show this afternoon, and someone posted that comment, and I meant to double check it. I don't know how much that really matters when you're talking about guys who've never played out there before. This isn't like this is a team that's, you know, that goes out there all the damn time. I mean, they play out there once every 8 years. Yeah. So I think they'll get off the schneid this year.
They were always horrible in the Meadowlands too. I think they only won there, and playing the Giants and the Jets, I think they only won there once, maybe twice. They were horrible in the Meadowlands for years. So we'll see. No, it should be good though.
The curse of Jimmy Hoffa's corpse under the somewhere in the concrete of the Meadowlands.
They always, Harry Carson always said, in a goal line stand, he would always hear somebody underneath him screaming, "Help me, help me."
That's fantastic. Tom, any final words before we get out of here?
No, just, thank you for inviting me, and thanks Bengal fans everywhere for backing us. You know, like I said, you know, Tyler Boyd said today he's keeping receipts. So let's keep the faith. Let's keep backing them. Over the last 2 years, they've deserved us. They've deserved our support. I think they do this year too. Just some of the breaks that have gone our ways the last couple of years with injuries and so forth have jumped up and bit us this year. So hopefully, you know, they can right the ship. It's just not too late. So keep the faith with them and keep an eye on our elected officials. We don't want to lose this team. And that lease expires in a couple of years. And I know the Bengals have been very proactive in trying to get stuff done, and the forces they need to work with and the forces that whisper in the ears of those they need to work with have kept things a little too slow. So I think we'll be talking about that a lot in the near future. But no, Joe, thank you for having me.
Yeah, Tom, appreciate you coming on. Yeah, about the stadium. And again, that's a long conversation for time down the road, but it's interesting. The only thing that I'm kind of frustrated on, it's Bengals' preference that they want to have an open air stadium. And I get, you know, football should be played outdoors, blah, 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 blah. If I were the city of Cincinnati, I would 100%, or Hamilton County, I guess, I would 100% agree to a contract, you know, whatever the legal paperwork is, for a dome stadium that they can use for Final Fours, they can use for try to bid on Super Bowls, you know, stuff like that. This is all the crap that they're missing out on because they have an absolute awful arena. They've got a toilet bowl sitting down there next to Great American Ballpark. And stuff that like the county can make revenue on because the economic impact of that.
With that, having a Lucas Oil type stadium that the roof opens like this is for us to get a Super Bowl and everything else. And when they were looking at us for the World Cup, we don't have enough quality hotel rooms.
Yeah, and that's
their quality hotel room. So.
And they're renovating the convention center, and that's always been an issue with the conventions too. And I think the city and the region is aware of that. But that's something that you win a bid for the World Cup, that not a ton of time. And the World Cup's is it next year?
This year?
No, it's in
2026.
How far are the Super Bowls scheduled? About 5 years?
Three to five.
Yeah. If they have that, I mean, they would have time to plan. They would have, you know, and if they get awarded, you've got time to, you know, they'd be able to address that, I think. But again, I get Indianapolis is a convention city. I mean, they have, because the Indianapolis 500, you get 500,000 people to watch.
Is, It's an event city. It's a fantastic city.
Yeah. It would be cool to see Cincinnati make an effort to try to tap into that market because, I mean, I
you would know, support in, this in the Bengals, in the Bengals' defense here, Cleveland, with a stadium that is 1 year older, the Browns are getting a brand new stadium.
Yeah, that's crazy.
The baseball stadium is getting gutted and completely redone and remodernized. Now, that's Cleveland.
Yeah.
Tennessee, with a stadium only a year or two older than Paul Brown Stadium, is getting a brand new football stadium, and they're also ready to build a brand new baseball stadium if they get an expansion franchise.
Yeah.
So those are those two cities. Oklahoma City is building a brand new basketball arena. Tampa is building a brand new baseball stadium. All of this, and probably Charlotte's getting a new stadium too.
Sure.
Buffalo is getting a brand new football stadium too.
$2 billion or however many billion?
All of this is happening proactively. No threats of moving. No name calling in the press. No sneering. No other business entities that might be jealous or insecure, snipping and fighting with each other or controlling the politicians for their own interest.
Yeah.
None of that's happening. What's wrong in Cincinnati? And again, keep in mind, with all those stadiums I just rifled off, the Bengals are asking for a refurbished Paul Brown Stadium. They're not asking for a new stadium. They like the setup. They want to bring, yeah. Does there have to be modifications to the lease? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in the end, they just want a refurbished, modernized Paul Brown Stadium. And if we don't have the Bengals, what's the county have? They've got that big stadium with no tenant.
Yeah.
So, you know, nothing is ever easy politically in this region, but this should be much farther along. And, you know, it's instead of asking questions, we should be closer to a resolution than we are.
Yeah. And the one thing in the Bengals' favor is the franchise, on all accounts, on every front, are so much more of an appealing product than they were even 3, 4, 5 years ago. The PR done by the team, like they listen. I mean, everyone was furious and pissed off in 2019, 2020 about where the franchise was. They listened. I mean, they've completely redone, like they have, you know, they're doing stuff they should have done 20 years ago, 40 years ago, Ring of Honor.
The people in that front office from the top down has done a complete 180. They are friendly. They will bust their tail to do anything they can for you. They are supportive of the city as a whole. Not just themselves. They've really, and I think a lot of that is to be credited with Mike Brown's granddaughters, Katie is his daughter, Elizabeth and Caroline. And a lot of what they did. I think they've modernized the thinking down there. They've modernized the presentation, and really put a fresh face on things. Maybe not that it wasn't there before, but it was hidden. They're very charitable. That's a very charitable organization. They put so much into the community, it to be realized, and it finally is. So, they've got some wounds to heal from the past, from some of the old war horses here in town, and some of the tired old thinking that needs to go and is really antiquated and holds the city back. So, hopefully, things will get done. But it is time for things to be moving in the right direction there.
Completely agree with you. I'm optimistic, and again, this is going to play out over next handful of years. But I'm optimistic that something will get taken care of. They don't. I mean, the city and the county, they can't afford to lose the Bengals. Obviously, they don't want to be known for having the worst, the worst agreement with the team in history, which is what all these places were saying about Paul Brown. So there's room for a fair and equitable, public-private agreement to build something that's good, that's good for the community. Obviously, it's going to benefit the Bengals because they're the tenant, but there's room for something that it's going to, that that benefits, you know, people are still going to bitch that, you know, tax money shouldn't, you know, taxpayer money shouldn't go to this, or they should do that, or just whatever. But people are going to say about that anyway. There's room for, you know, for an equitable deal to be struck. So I'm confident it'll happen, but we shall see.
All right,
everyone.
Thank you for having us. Thank you for having
me. Tom, thanks for being here. Real quick before we get out of here, follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/riverfrontcincy. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/riverfrontcincy. Join our family at patreon.com/riverfrontcincy. You can join for as little as $2 a month. You get the awesome added benefit of being able to join our Slack, the Riverfront Slack, which we've got channels. We talk about everything. We have, just looking here, we've got one for just video games. We've got one for television, soccer, you know, that other football. Bengals channel, primarily the Reds, college football. It's a fun time. An awesome group of guys, and you know, it's a blast to be on there again. Like that's, you know, that's how I came to be on this show, was getting in on the Slack channel and sucking up to Chad and Nate Dawson for them to finally give me the shut up by giving me my own show. So outside of that, Houdet, Bengals will win. This is a must win game. We will see you guys on Sunday night. We'll be here pretty much right after the game. Usually we go live at 8 o'clock, and that'll be not long after the game wraps up here. So I'm not sure who will be with me, but I'll hopefully have somebody with me, so you're not just listening to me for half an hour. So outside of that, everyone take care.